The most expensive part of AI may not be the chip. It may be the contract that decides who pays when the chip stops being scarce. Welcome to the Cato Daily Digest for August 5, 2026.
And that contract is doing two jobs. It reserves capacity today. It also assigns tomorrow's risk, often to people who never negotiated the terms.
Start with Amazon. Its claim is concrete. Servers bought against visible demand can break even in under 3 years. The data centers around them can earn for more than 30 years.
That is a clean case. Match a server to a customer, recover the server cost, keep earning from the building, power, and network after the hardware is replaced.
Google has a different structure. It can sell scarce compute to Anthropic through multi-year commitments while still financing Gemini. Anthropic is a customer, a rival, and a hedge against Google backing the wrong model.
But scarcity makes weak contracts look strong. A customer may commit because it fears having no capacity, not because the price will make sense when supply improves.
Right. A signature proves demand at the negotiated terms today. It does not prove utilization, renewal, depreciation-adjusted margin, or returns above the cost of capital.
SpaceX makes that gap hard to ignore. Quarterly revenue was $7.8 billion. Capital spending was $18.3 billion. It burned $25 billion in 6 months.
And it has more than $14 billion in compute agreements intended to turn that build-out into contracted revenue.
Intended is carrying weight there.
It is. My read is that these agreements make the investment more financeable because lenders and shareholders can see a path to payment. If that holds, utilization should rise, customer concentration should fall, and renewals should survive looser supply.
If customers renegotiate once alternatives appear, then the agreements were reservations written during a shortage. Useful reservations, but not proof of durable returns.
The strongest counter to my view is exactly that. Two futures. In one, contracts convert infrastructure into a utility-like asset with visible cash flow. In the other, they postpone recognition that too much capacity was built at scarcity prices.
And the human cost lands after the financial language disappears. Employees lose jobs. Suppliers eat canceled orders. Communities keep the power and water burden. Customers discover that dependent workflows are expensive to move.
So the humane test is not whether a contract exists. It is whether the risk is visible to the people who cannot renegotiate it.
That is the real pressure point.
We've financed the capacity. Now move to the mechanism expected to repay it, existing search and advertising cash flows. Google is not asking investors to value Gemini only as a future frontier model winner. It says, Gemini improves search and ad matching.
Which gives the spending an existing cash register. Better answers may retain users. Better matching may raise the value of each commercial query.
That matters because search already has distribution, intent, and advertisers. A small improvement across that base can produce more revenue than a new AI subscription with fewer users.
Or AI becomes a more expensive way to defend the same query. Longer answers cost more to generate. They may reduce clicks, and rivals can force Google to add AI features without letting it charge more.
Yes. The accounting question is incremental value. Suppose AI raises revenue per search by 2%, but pushes serving cost up by 5%. Engagement can improve while the economics deteriorate.
There is also a measurement trap. If search would have declined without Gemini, management can call avoided loss a return. That may be true, but it is harder to audit than new revenue.
My hypothesis is that Google's advantage is not a magical model. It is the ability to route AI gains into an existing auction. If that is right, we should see better conversion, stronger pricing, or more commercial searches without a matching rise in acquisition cost.
If margins narrow while usage holds steady, then AI is functioning like defensive security spending. Necessary, valuable, and not a new profit engine.
I concede that distinction. I have sometimes treated protecting search as equivalent to expanding search. Today's evidence does not justify that shortcut.
And protecting a giant business can still support large spending. It just demands a different valuation story.
If revenue cannot fully justify spending, procurement leverage becomes the next defense against infrastructure costs. AMD is reportedly offering Anthropic up to $5 billion alongside a chip supply agreement. That is not a normal sale. AMD is financing a customer relationship and buying entry into frontier workloads.
Which sounds competitive until you ask what happens after the finance demand ends.
Exactly. The first milestone is installation. The real milestone is sustained workload share without fresh subsidies.
NVIDIA still has demand above supply, and its newest systems are shipping more smoothly. Reliability-sensitive customers do not switch because a spreadsheet says another chip is cheaper.
They switch when the full stack works. Hardware, networking, libraries, debugging, trained staff, and predictable delivery. NVIDIA's moat is accumulated operating knowledge as much as silicon.
AMD can still weaken NVIDIA without replacing it. A credible second quote changes a negotiation. Buyers can demand better prices, delivery terms, and support.
That is procurement insurance. It transfers some surplus from the dominant supplier to the buyer.
Google's planned fixed-purpose inference chip is another version. Freeze a stable workload, remove flexibility you do not need, and optimize cost.
Training rewards general-purpose power because models and methods keep changing. Inference becomes more repetitive. Once a model and serving pattern stabilize, specialization can pay.
Until the workload changes. Then the cheap chip becomes a rigid asset attached to yesterday's assumptions.
Right. The bet depends on workload half-life. If the same operations run at high volume for several years, fixed silicon can win. If architectures shift every 6 months, flexibility retains value.
And Rubin changes the software calculation. Hardware scheduling reduces the payoff from giant hand-fused kernels. Some optimization work that looked defensible may become obsolete at the next hardware cycle.
That opens room for modular production software. Teams can spend less effort building one enormous kernel and more effort choosing the right model, batch size, latency target, and reasoning budget.
Here's my challenge. You are calling this competition, but the evidence may show bargaining leverage inside NVIDIA's market.
Fair. My read is that buyers are creating alternatives faster than challengers are creating ecosystems. If that changes, we should see unfinanced renewals, growing developer preference, and important workloads moving by choice.
If NVIDIA keeps the hardest jobs while rivals absorb subsidized or predictable work, then NVIDIA loses some pricing power, but retains the control point.
Two futures again. A multi-supplier market, or one dominant ecosystem surrounded by negotiation tools.
Commitments tell us the buyer wants an option. Workloads tell us whether the option became a market.
Once buyers diversify chips, the coordination problem shifts upward to the software layer that selects and manages them. The new tollbooth is the control plane. A router can choose a cheap model for extraction, a stronger one for judgment, and extra reasoning only when uncertainty warrants the cost.
That sounds like freedom from any single model vendor.
It can be. Shared authentication, tracing, fallbacks, patching, and deployment controls make switching practical. The enterprise owns the harness while models compete inside it.
Steelman it further. A company can test models against its own failures, route sensitive work locally, and preserve service when one provider goes down.
Yes, but the Strawman version is a dashboard that claims neutrality while quietly steering every request toward the platform's preferred economics.
And the gatekeeper has moved upward. The model no longer decides everything. The layer holding memory, permissions, evaluation data, and execution history does.
Persistent context deepens that power. A one-off response can be abandoned. A recurring agent accumulates files, credentials, schedules, and knowledge about how work gets done.
Which is why my delegated intent boundary matters. A suggestion is not authorization. If an agent reads my calendar and email, it may propose a task. It should still show its sources before acting.
Scheduled work raises the standard again. Every recurring job needs an inspectable prompt, run history, permissions view, visible failure state, and one-click stop control.
Plus exportable state. If continuity lives only in platform summaries, leaving means losing the working memory you helped create.
Here's the cross-story connection. The mechanism is upstream commitment. Amazon secures demand before deploying servers. Routers allocate model cost before a step runs. Agents should secure permission before turning inferred intent into action.
That is useful, but commitment is not control unless it can be revised. A stale contract, routing rule, or permission can automate the wrong decision at scale.
Agreed. The durable control point is not the initial yes. It is the ability to inspect, amend, and revoke that yes before the next execution.
Who pays the operational tax?
The buyer does, at least initially. Tracing, evaluation, access reviews, incident repair, and continuity are real labor. Orchestration lowers supplier dependency by creating internal responsibility.
That trade can be worth making, but enterprise-owned should not be a polite phrase for someone in operations inherits an invisible second job.
A control plane that optimizes cost also concentrates permissions, credentials, and failure paths. That brings us to Exploit Jim. An autonomous cyber evaluation reportedly crossed from nominal containment into real exposure because the sandbox, shutdown process, and accountability chain were inadequate.
The model's offensive capability is only half the result. The evaluation harness is part of the capability because it determines where the action can land.
Then consider the NPM compromise. Pre-install hooks harvested access across GitHub, Amazon Web Services, Kubernetes, and Vault.
An ordinary dependency attack becomes broader when an agent can install packages, execute code, and retain powerful credentials without a human reviewing each step.
The failure chain is mechanical. A trusted workflow pulls a poisoned package. The install hook runs. Credentials are collected. The attacker reaches source code, cloud systems, clusters, and secrets.
And each layer may have a different owner. The developer chose the package. Security set the policy. The platform stored credentials. The agent executed the command. Who bears the loss?
My view is that accountability should follow control over the boundary. If a vendor designs the sandbox and claims containment, it owns the failure of that containment. If the customer expands permissions against guidance, responsibility shifts.
The best counter is shared causation. Vendors can point to configuration. Customers can point to defaults. Model providers can point to the harness. Everyone has a technically plausible escape route.
Then contracts need operational evidence. Which credential was available? Which policy allowed access? When detection fired? And whether revocation could stop the next action?
Logs are necessary, but they are not repair. A perfect trace can tell you precisely how the damage became irreversible.
True. Containment must reduce blast radius before explanation begins. Short-lived credentials, isolated environments, network limits, human approval for boundary changes, a kill switch outside the agent's control.
And a named person with authority to use it. The system could have been stopped. Means little if nobody knew they owned the decision.
If those controls work, we should see incidents contained to one task or environment. If credentials remain broad and persistent, then the safety layer is documentation wrapped around exposure.
This is where human cost becomes governance. The person harmed by a breach does not care whether the failure began in the model package or permission layer. They need one accountable path to remedy.
Containment determines whether a system is safe to deploy. Unit economics determines whether deployment can persist. Listen, Labs is reportedly raising $125 million at a $1.5 billion valuation. That would triple its price in 7 months. It is targeting more than $110 million in annualized revenue by year end.
Enterprise interest in automated customer interviews is real. A voice agent can run many conversations, preserve transcripts, and compare patterns without interviewer drift.
Capability has arrived. The harder fact is that real-time voice agents can still cost more than overseas call center labor at high volume.
Which changes the adoption question. A demo asks whether the agent can conduct the interview. Operations asks whether 10,000 interviews produce savings after inference, supervision, failures, compliance, and integration.
There are tasks where the comparison is not one agent versus one worker. Faster research may help a product team avoid a bad launch. One useful insight can repay many interviews.
That is the strongest case. High-value discovery, multilingual reach, irregular demand, and conversations that would not have happened otherwise.
The weaker case is direct labor replacement in repetitive voice work. Offshore centers already have low wages, trained managers, quality systems, and human escalation.
And humans improve too. Better scripts, software assistance, and lower turnover can move the benchmark while inference costs fall.
My hypothesis is that voice AI wins first where speed and coverage matter more than the cheapest minute. If that holds, revenue should concentrate in research, logistics exceptions, and specialized support before broad call center replacement.
If customers run pilots but cap production volume, financing enthusiasm is outrunning observable cash flow.
AI power companies trading near the discounted value of signed contracts offer an instructive contrast. Their downside has a physical contracted anchor, even if execution can still fail.
Voice companies often price future margin before the cost curve has delivered it. Investors are betting that inference gets cheaper faster than human alternatives get better.
And we should update when the data moves. I expected conversational quality to be the binding constraint for longer. The evidence now says cost, integration, and supervision are doing more of the blocking.
That is progress. Capability can be ahead of economics without being fake. It just means adoption follows the tasks where value per interaction is highest.
The contract from our opening is not merely a promise to pay for the chip. It is the exit hatch. When the platform or agent fails, can the buyer understand the failure, repair the damage, and leave?
If that hatch opens from only one side, the price of control was hidden in the lock.
Until next time.
Keep your exits inspectable.